Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change?
To Resilient Stories Podcast. I'm Dr. Tommy Watson, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from failure and adversity to go and live the best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway. We believe everyone has a story to tell and sell. If you want to learn how to tell and sell your story, go to tawatson.com under the programs and products page. Click on Million Dollar Business Pathway to get yourself started. So folks, are you guys ready for another amazing show today? Joining me, I have the one and only, Tashane Johnson. How you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing super. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you on as well. And thank you for your service to our country. I really appreciate that and love all the work you're doing now. So for our listening audience who may not necessarily know you, can you tell them briefly who you are?
Yes, sir. So I'm a motivational speaker, best-selling author, world record athlete, and first and foremost, dad of a beautiful six-year-old girl.
Oh, awesome. You cannot beat that. No more important job than being a dad, right?
Oh man, I always say, man, I don't know if I could do well with a boy, but having a little girl is man, it's the most amazing feeling in the world. It produces the most anger and love at the same time. It's the craziest Absolutely. Thing, you know. It's Absolutely. Like anybody touches her, and you'd gladly do 30 years in prison, yes. No problem, you know.
Absolutely,
with a smile.
I have three girls and two boys. So I know the feeling there as well. So Tashane, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to contact you?
Yeah, so they can visit my website at www.tshaneinspires.com. And of course, on all social media handles, I'm at Tashane Johnson.
Oh, that is awesome. So again, I appreciate you being on the show. And Tashane, as you know, our show focuses on stories of resilient people like yourselves and having kind of talk us through one of the most difficult times that you face in your life. And I want to start with my first question here. So what's been the biggest obstacles you've had to overcome personally or professionally?
Yeah, there's quite a few of those. I think the biggest one that a lot of people like to talk about or relate about is my experience of dying three times when I was in the Marine Corps. So yeah, that was one of my big ones.
Yeah, that's profound. Tell us a little more about that, how that came about.
Yes, sir. So I was, you know, pretty typical. I had the opportunity to grow up in a small town. Marine Corps was a phenomenal option for me. I always wanted to be a Marine. You know, you can't beat the dress blues. And of course, being the best, you know, in the military branches, it was just a 277 plus years of just dominating. It was just something amazing, the leadership about it. So I joined the Marine Corps right out of high school about 3 days after I graduated. And, you know, I was, again, very fortunate, graduated top of my class. Mm-hmm. I was meritoriously promoted three times. I was pretty much the picture perfect Marine, you know, just, you know, kicking butt and taking names. I had joined 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines in 29 Palms, as my first duty station in infantry. I was there about a year and a half. We did our tour over in Okinawa, came back. And I ended up joining 1st Reconnaissance Battalion, which is a special operations division of the Marine Corps. And they're kind of like that. You got a tryout. So you got a tryout. We did what's called Recon Introduction Nation Platoon. And you go through 3 months of training. And then as long as you pass, you become what they call an operator. So I had joined the unit and was going through our training. And we were training with some of the operators that were going through combat dives. So we did a thing called pre-scuba. So Marine Corps is pretty meticulous about anything that they approach. You know, sure. If they don't succeed and getting to, you know, sniper school, ranger school, combat dive, what ends up happening is they don't have an opportunity to fill those billets. They don't get open billets, so they don't get, you know, enough to send their guys over to those spots. So the success rate has to be high.
Sure.
So they run you through a training prior to actually going to that event to ensure that you do not fail at it. So we were training with those guys before they got ready to go, and it was just, you know, grueling days, 8 hours in the pool, doing every kind of exercise that you can think of. Finally, we got what's called a 72, 3 days off. Some liberty to get off the base,
sure,
which are very few and far between during those types of training. So I had a good friend of mine that he was currently in sniper school. He had gotten a little time off. So we decided we were going to go visit our friend over in Fullerton area or Corona area of California. And so he left a few hours earlier than me. And I had a motorcycle, hopped on the motorcycle, head out the back of the base. You know, when you're government issued property, you have all this gear you have to go on. It's not very appealing to the young lady's eyes as a 19-year-old man on a motorcycle. So you got to change your gear up a little bit. So I took my uniform off and, you know, put my tank top on and got ready for the sun's out, guns out of Southern California. And, you know, it was just get ready to enjoy life. I was, you know, I was loving everything about being a Marine and being with the unit I was very excited. And started to head off the back of the base. And as I was going off the back of the base, there's a, you know, you go down these hills, a little hilly down towards the Fallbrook area. You go down the hill and there was a car that was going into the left turning lane and I was going straight through the light. So I went straight to the light and the car ended up turning a right and hit me at 45 miles an hour. Wow. I was on the motorcycle. So I caught the corner of a brick house at 45 miles an hour across my chest.
Wow.
Broke my entire chest plate, collarbone, shoulder blade, all of my right hand, all of my ribs fractured and broke, cut into all my major organs, cut my skin, my kidney, spleen, liver, punctured my lungs. I had 350-cent-sized pieces in my lungs and my left bicep was lacerated. Wow. Come to find out it was a gang. They were trying to work on an initiation, kind of like a blood in, blood out sort of thing. And they kicked me until they thought I was dead and left me there and robbed me, took my stuff. Because of the type of gang that it was in Southern California, nobody would come out of the house and help me at all. So I ended up taking my right hand, put it on my left bicep, and I walked two blocks to a fire station, taking one full breath every minute. That was pretty challenging in itself. You know, fortunately for me, you know, as the doctor said, I was in phenomenal shape. I wanted to be a bodybuilder my whole life. So, you know, though I was doing a lot of the water training at night, I'd go back and do a lot of weight training to compete in the ABA shows. So I had kind of like a, you know, bulletproof vest of protection of muscle over the top of my body that helped me absorb quite a bit of the injury in comparison to what, you know, a normal person would go through. And then of course, being in pre-scuba and combat dive, you know, my lung capacity was, you know, was insane. So I was used to passing out underwater or used to, you know, taking, you know, short breaths for long periods of time. So, as I was walking, you know, two blocks of that fire station, I got there, there happened to be a doctor on site and they bay flighted me out. And as they started to do that, they had to run chest tubes, in order to get the fluid out of my lungs, because, you know, when your chest is broken and, you know, what I mean, like your entire chest, all of your organs are punctured, you're bleeding internally. And then my lungs started to fill up with fluid. So I was pretty much just drowning. I was just, you know, underwater. I'm just sucking in all that blood. Yeah. So they took the first scalpel, cut me open, ran a tube in, let out all the fluid. And of course what happened, my lungs, you know, collapsed and I couldn't breathe. So they worked on trying to do that, get me back to my breathing. And then I flatlined out the first time. It was my first experience dying. Mm. And, they brought me back, put the paddles like you see in the movies, you know, and boom, I come back. We get to the hospital. They finally land. And just because of the trauma, I flatline out the second time. So they start to work on me for a little bit, bring me back. And the third time they intubate me, trying to get me squared away. And then I flatlined out the third time. That one I was out for quite some time. Matter of fact, they thought I was dead. They pretty much said, hey, this guy's done. And then, you know, I had my experience with God and had a few moments to have that conversation and then made my choice and, you know, jokes on everyone else. I came back and lived the third time.
That's phenomenal, T-Shane. I really appreciate you having the courage to, one, endure it and to get beyond it and to share your story as well. So, you know, oftentimes many of us, we probably have spent time riding on motorcycles or driving in cars. We never probably would imagine, you know, in a million years that someone would just come out of blue and hit us and then, you know, engage in trying to take our lives. So as you were going through that, man, talk to me about some of the emotions you were feeling going through the situation where you're being stomped and you don't know if you're going to survive. And then you're literally getting up, trying to walk yourself to a place where you can, that might be your last hope.
Sure.
What were some of the emotions and feelings you were dealing with during this time?
Well, you know, you got to think, I was very fortunate as part of one of the most elite units in the world. So, you know, their training comes in play. It's not necessarily an emotional response as more as it is a trained action. So, you know, when you get into a position like that, well, in the way that we were trained, it's not really a panic mode. It's more about how do I get to where I need to do in order to accomplish the mission, i.e. stay alive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really it was about, you know, kind of playing possum until I realized that the enemy was no longer a threat. Once I had to do that, then action had to take place. I had to eliminate the bleeding, right? The more I bled, you know, your body holds 6 pints. I lost 4 pints. I knew that was going to be a problem. And then of course, as I'm starting to, you know, take a walk, and, you know, bleeding out over the concrete without any help, more than likely, you know, when you're in a position or a situation like that, your mind starts to think that, you know, you're not going to get a whole lot of help. So execution is key. So you're just kind of maintaining, making sure that your mind is set, that you're prepared, you're not panicking, you're not using any more oxygen than you need to. To be honest with you, it was very methodical. It was very militant in my approach. Just get to a position where I could be safe, be taken care of, and then take it from there. The emotional portion didn't really happen until my third experience dying. But up until that point, it was definitely very, very mission driven. Just get there and stay alive.
Wow. So at the third point, dying third time, what were some of the emotions you engaged in experience?
Yeah. So that was, that was my fortunate advantage over all humans in the world that have not experienced, the conversation with God and a true conversation. So, it really is a lot like you see in the movies for my experience. And I've only spoken to, it's not like there's a ton of us, but a few other people that have, went on the other side and come back, and our experiences are pretty similar. The gist of it is I ended up out of body experience. You're looking down at yourself. You're seeing all these amazing people trying to keep you alive. The voice was more of a subconscious conversation. And it was, I don't know how to put it in words because I don't think our brains can comprehend yet. I just don't think we're on that level to really comprehend the amount of utopia that you feel. The pain, it's not like just the pain was gone. It was like, in life, we've got all this noise and all this agony and all this stuff coming at us 24/7. And I don't think we ever really get to experience just true, pure relaxation or meditation. And that's what it was like. I mean, it was like every single bit of pain, worry, concern about everything was completely gone. Yeah. And the voice, had a conversation with me, I God, and said, listen, here, you got two options, said one, you can give up and I won't judge you. And everything's going to be all right. You're fine. I got you. The other one was, you have an option to live if you choose so. You're going to go through a tremendous amount of pain and you're going to tell the story. And I'll be honest with you, at the time, I literally had no idea what that even meant. I just knew that, man, I had gotten out of this small town. I was kicking butt in the military. Why did this happen to me? I wanted to choose door number two and continue to live. Joke's on you guys, right? I picked pick the one to live. So that was the emotional experience. And again, as I went through that, I didn't learn to appreciate it a lot more until later, as the story starts to unfold. But it was definitely an amazing experience.
And that is definitely an amazing experience and encounter as well. So as you're going through this process, did you hear any words from any of the folks who were reaching out to you to try to help you? Say there was a doctor there.
Yes. Is
there anything that the doctor said guided you on to keep you going?
Not really. I that voice that was speaking to me was just overempowering. I mean, it was, again, everything else was quiet. There wasn't anything else that I could remember coming back up. Not until I came to, where it was almost like my body was back in and we're back in the game again to start fighting was, you could hear the nurses. And again, they're very objective driven too, right? So they're trying not to panic and maintain the integrity of their job and what they're doing. But no, I didn't hear any of that. I mean, it was just, it was once God said, you're ready to go, I think I was just back in the fight again. And I just went back to focusing on that.
Absolutely. So when you're on the ground being stopped by these gang members, what kept you from giving up at that moment right there? Because again, I've watched people go through that and give up in that moment and not get up on their feet and move forward. What kept you going?
I'm a Marine. I mean, we don't give up. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a oath that you take the day that you earn the opportunity to become a Marine. I mean, so we don't give up. We don't surrender. We don't stop. So, I mean, I'd love to tell you that it was some internal fortitude of the way I was raised, but it wasn't. It was the fact that I earned the Eagle Globe and Anchor and was part of a brotherhood that exists for many, many years. And I just didn't have that option. That's not how it works. I mean, look, you can call combat whatever you want. You can call it downrange in Afghanistan or Fallujah. You can call it, whatever label you want to put on it. But, combat is an experience to fight for your life and complete a mission. And at that time, that's exactly what I was going through. So my mindset stayed exactly the same, was just to focus on making sure that that I stayed alive. But I mean, I wasn't going to stop at all or quit.
Yeah, that's powerful, man. I appreciate you sharing that. So as you look back on that experience today, how would you say it all shaped you as a person?
I'm sure, like your story and your experience, I think it goes in stages, different ways that it starts to evolve, right? I think it's different when you don't have kids. And then when you do have kids, it starts to change a lot more and it starts to adapt. It's a lot like leadership. It's not a one size fits all sort of thing. I'd say, fast forward to the end, you know, it allows me to be the father I probably would have never been. You know, my parents were, you know, absentee. My mother left when I was 9. So I didn't really have, you know, a whole lot. I was the oldest. I took care of my handicapped brother and my sister. And, you know, so, you know, we all have a story. We all have our challenges. And for me, it goes in two different directions. One, it's a little dark because, you know, you go through the stage of why did God select me? Like, who am I? You know, I mean, you know, I'm a nobody compared to there's amazing people that are out there that should get a second chance at life. At the same time, you feel like rent's due, right? So you owe this massive amount of debt to God for allowing you this opportunity to live. So you got to pay up each month, and it better be something pretty high level, because if he picked you, then you got a man up, you know? So it kind of feels like that on a day-to-day basis, especially more now than it ever did. And then being a father, it's a whole other level, because maybe I was given that opportunity to make her something even bigger, better, and greater. So you think about that as a father, and again, rent's due. So, you know, you gotta keep working and paying for it.
Absolutely, man. Very, very good lesson to learn from that whole experience and ordeal. And thank God you made it through, and thank God you're here to share your story.
Of course.
You know, if you're saying we're coming off of a year that was very tough for a lot of folks, man, people have lost loved ones, lost finances, lost jobs, lost hope in some situations. What words of advice can you give those folks out there to let them know that a better day is to come?
Well, I think, you know, the fact that you can walk outside and be on the right side of the ground is the first step. I think that answer would be to, you know, a multitude of people. But I think if I could relate to one audience specifically, I would say to dads, you know, I would say, look, if there's a moment that you can walk in on your little one, and you know, when they're little and you walk into the room and they don't think you're in there, and you see them and they're playing, right? Or they're doing something, and everything about them that's their personality is doing something, right? And it's the perfection of everything good about you, right? So eliminate and trim all the fat of all the bad things, and go in and look at just you did it right, man, right? You did it right. Like there's that perfection right there. You know, or that time where they fall asleep on your lap, or you walk in and you see them and they were having so much fun. They lay down on the bed and they're, you know, they're laying with their cat, or they're stuffy, or they're doing something. I think that, you know, if you're a parent and you think life's tough, then I think you need to learn to appreciate being a parent a little bit more. For me, fortunately, I don't care how horrible the world's going. If I can walk in and selfishly, honestly, because it is, and see that my little nugget is happy and smiling, then nothing else matters outside those doors. Absolutely. So, you know, though the world's going through all these, it's always going to be like that. There's always going to be struggle, right? I mean, that's the appreciation of, you know, people purchase pleasure for their inability to endure pain. But I think if I had to really, you know, share it with a specific audience, I'd say, you know, dads, before you go out telling the world how hard it is, you know, go back into that room and look at that little girl, you know, or your little one, and appreciate, you know, how good you really have it.
That's right. You know, sometimes we get so caught up in what's not going right that we miss what's going right. So right. Great advice. Tishane, man, thank you for sharing that advice. Hey, if folks want to get a hold of you again, what's the best way to do that?
Yes, sir. So they can visit my website at www.tishaneinspires.com or on all my social media handles at Tishane Johnson.
Hey, be sure to reach out to Tishane, bring him in as a speaker, coach, consultant. Man, this guy knows what he's talking about. You cannot miss or go wrong with him at all. So Tishane, we talked about some tough stuff. You ready to have some fun?
I am. Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. So this portion of the show is called our rapid fire purpose questions. I'm going to ask you a number of questions about purpose. I'm not going to elaborate on any of the questions. I want you to simply give me and the audience your best answer. You ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. Tell us how you have turned a dream into reality.
Taking massive action.
What gives your life meaning?
My daughter.
What one word best describes you?
Killer.
What problem do you want to solve in our world?
Bringing back Dad the Hero.
Yeah. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Fish.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Spend with my daughter.
What did your 15-year-old self imagine you would be doing right now?
A Marine.
There you go, good. If you had to teach someone something, what would you teach them?
How to fish.
Good. I'm gonna track you down on that one. I've fished one time and I'm not good at it, man. So
teach a man to fish.
There you go. You eat for days, right? Who inspires you the most?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say personally, my daughter inspires me the most. I'd say if it was a commercial response, I've always been a big fan of Zig Ziglar and Les Brown.
Yeah, absolutely. Two good ones. Yeah. And your daughter, I'm sure she definitely love to hear that when she gets older as well. What's something about yourself we might be surprised to learn about you?
I ran 40 miles in less than 8 hours at 250 pounds with a 20-pound pack.
Man, that's awesome. I love it. What's on your bucket list to do within the next year?
Break 2 world records.
That's right. Tell us about those.
Yeah, actually, in about 5 days, I attempt to break 2 world records. One is the most pushups in 1 hour, which is over 2,919. The second is the most pushups in 12 hours, which is 19,325. And that record's held for over 32 years.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. We're pulling for you, brother. Pulling for you. What's something you'll spend your time doing no matter what?
Hanging out with my daughter. That's the best.
Yeah. What do you want your grandchildren to say about you?
Oh, geez. That I was a great dad and I made an impact to the world and changed people's lives. I really do. I hope they think that.
If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
That's a good question. Superpower would be, if I was a superhero, I like the Hulk, man. You know, that internal rage into a positive direction.
Absolutely. You can't go wrong there. What do you love to learn about?
I love everything. I enjoy being able to grasp knowledge from all aspects. I love learning from all different types of people.
I love it. What sparks your creativity?
Other people. I love hearing about other people's passions and drives and dreams. And then those who actually take action on it. Rich is just talking about it.
Absolutely. If you became president today, what law would you pass first?
That we're all equal.
Absolutely. That's a good one. I'm sure you get a lot of amens to that one right there. Yeah. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
Living or not living?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'd say Abraham Lincoln. Huh. I enjoy the fact of someone who's, you know, I'm reading his leadership mentor book right now. And the, you know, what's interesting is you talk about presidents, you know, 100 years ago, and they're remembered forever. Then we're having challenges do that now. But it's amazing to be able to see that these people are willing to be so dedicated to the betterment of mankind. Few and far between nowadays. You know, it happens more corporate in our platforms where we have to do it individually versus in the government side. So Abraham Lincoln's always been a big fan of mine. I love the fact that he's been through so many challenges, goes back and dedicated to making sure that we're all equal.
Awesome. That's a good response as well. What do you love to do for others?
Be successful.
What's been the best gift someone's ever given you?
Time.
What's been the best compliment you've ever received?
That they decided to not pull the trigger today.
Love it. What's one thing you have never been afraid to do?
Take risk.
Yes. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
Well, I'd say if it was at least 18, becoming a Marine.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. What does success look like for you?
Being a great father, work time, family balance.
I love it. If I talk to the people around you, what would they say your purpose is?
My daughter.
My daughter. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you most grateful for?
Just marked down my daughter.
Right? Love this podcast.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And I love it. I mean, no better answers. What's been your biggest lesson you've learned in life?
Just to remember that everybody has a story. Everybody's got a past. Everybody's got pains, problems, and issues. And, you know, never judge. Always respect people for everything that they've done in their life.
Yeah, I love it. Last but not least, Shane, how do you want to be remembered in history?
As the guy that broke as many world records as possible. I don't know. That's a really hard question, actually. That's a good last question. I don't really care what people think about me, to be honest with you. I just want to be the person that my daughters look for the rest of her life. And then hopefully one day when she's 62 years old and I've stacked enough bodies in the back of the house, that she finds somebody that empowers her to make her great. That's all I look forward to.
I love it. What's your daughter's name, Shane?
Charlie?
Yes, sir. Oh, awesome, man. You survived. Give yourself a round of applause to Shane. Right.
Thank you.
Charlie, you got to be very, very proud of your dad, man. You're talking about a guy who loves you to death, man. I love it. I love seeing dads love on their kids, man. So I appreciate you for that. Shane, you survived, man. Thank you for your service as well. Tushane, as we get to wrap things up, the focus of our podcast centers on two things: purpose and resiliency. What last words can you leave our audience with around purpose and resiliency?
Love.
Yeah.
I don't think we do a good enough job of that. Loving yourself.
Yeah.
You know, loving the people around you. I think, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, and, you know, being a Marine and the top personality I should have, or what people would expect me to have. I think if we did a better job of loving that neighbor and making sure we appreciate people and take care of people, we'd have a lot less problems. I've done a lot of work in the homeless sector. I've done a lot of work, you know, in drug and alcohol addiction. And I will tell you, you know, the one reason why I think that I love my daughter, you know, more than anything in the world is because, you know, in child trafficking and all those issues, if you sit in an audience with 5,000 of those people and you ask them to raise their hand about how many of them have their fathers in their lives, not very many of them raise their hands. And that's a shame. You know, as dads drop the ball substantially when it comes to being an empowered person to their little girls. You know, again, I can't speak on having a boy, but I'm sure it's pretty much the same. It's a shame that we're doing a really bad job of not picking up the pieces with that. Cause I think if we started there at the dinner table, we had those conversations and empowered them to be great, powerful people, we'd have a lot less problems in the world today.
Absolutely, man. Tushane Johnson, very well said, brother. I appreciate you. And again, I can't thank you enough for your service. I can't thank you enough for your fight in you, man. I can't thank you enough for being a father out there. So folks, if you're looking for a motivational speaker, you got to go contact Tushane Johnson. Tushane, one more time, if people want to contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yes, sir. TushaneInspires.com or at my social media handles at Tushane Johnson.
And I know you're inspired after hearing this story out there. Again, folks, if you're someone out there and you're an overcomer, you have an amazing story, we want to hear from you, please go to tawatson.com. Everyone out there, subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download this episode, rate it, share it with your folks on social media. Again, I want to thank you all for listening. Tushane Johnson, thank you again very much for joining us today. Man, I can't thank you enough, brother. And everyone else out there, peace, God bless, and deuces.
Yours truly, Dr. Watson.